coming to you from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, by way of Stone Mountain, Georgia, birthed by the great state of South Carolina, is the Bryant Land Country Podcast, your place for any and everything in hunting, fishing, sports, and outdoor related, with heavy doses of randomness, guests, and an all-around good time. Here's your host, proud Gamecock, South Carolina forever, AB3.
It took me a few minutes here today because I broke out the video camera and the lights and set it up here in my little makeshift studio so I can start recording on video the intros that I record for the Bryant Land Country Podcast and the outros and some of the bonus episodes that I record for the Bryant Land Country Podcast. Hopefully over the summer, I will take some time, me and the kids will get together and we'll put together a couple behind the scene videos of just how we put things together here at the podcast. So it took me a few minutes this morning to get things set up. So if it sounds like I'm out of breath a little bit, that is why. Nevertheless, welcome to the Bryant Land Country Podcast. I am your host, AB3. Thank you for taking the time to download this podcast, no matter where you're getting it from, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Podbean, TuneIn app. You know, our podcast is available wherever you consume your podcast. Thank you for taking the time. Like I said, we got a little behind the scenes work going on here on the podcast today. I went out yesterday, bought some black draping to kind of give me a better background, a nice black background for some video work that I'm doing here today. But that doesn't stop what we got going on as far as our guest today. So I'm going to get right into that. My guest today is Brandon Goodwin, the Hutton student on Instagram. Brandon is from Northern California, and I don't know much about hunting in Northern California, okay? So that was why I reached out to him. I wanted to talk to him. He's putting together a nice hunting student network, a resource for new hunters. So Brandon, like I said, I've checked out his work on Instagram and his page, and he's got some things going together. So at the stroke of midnight Eastern time was when we recorded this conversation. I think it was right before turkey season got kicked off. So you'll hear some references about starting turkey season. I think turkey season had just started in California for him, and we're going to follow up with him probably at a later date here just to see how his turkey season went. But Brandon was kind enough to join me after a long day. It was a Sunday when we recorded this, so he actually had a full day. He went hunting, he had some family obligations, and then around 9 o'clock his time, like I said, midnight Eastern time, he took the time to sit down with me and talk to me on the podcast. So as per usual, I'm going to fall back. You guys kick back and listen to my conversation with the hunting student, Brandon Goodwin, on the Bryant Land Country Podcast. Brandon Goodwin, man, thanks for joining me, man. You've had a long day, man. You've been out in the woods. It's 9 o'clock. You out west. Where you at in California?
Yeah, up here in Northern California, just outside of Sacramento, a little town called Folsom.
Okay.
Made famous by Johnny Cash. I'm not in Folsom Prison, but I live right next to it. So,
how far is that from Modesto?
It's about an hour 10 from Modesto. Maybe okay. A little further.
Okay.
Been on track.
I got a friend of mine that is from Fresno, California, and one of my favorite movies is like a B-level, I don't even know if it's a B-level, it might even be a C-level movie, with Ice Cube and Mike Epps, Janky Promoters, and they talk about Modesto, like it was filmed in Modesto, California. So every time I talk to her, I always be like, you know, shout out to Modesto.
Modesto is south of Stockton, so if you remember, like the housing bubble and all that stuff, Stockton was blowing up there for a second, and Modesto is just outside of Stockton. So it's like its claim to fame is Stockton, and Stockton's claim to fame is being kind of one of those areas that blew up and then crashed real hard here.
It fell like you said, when that bubble popped, that was one of the main places, man. But you know, California. You don't, at least for me, and, you know, maybe this is me showing my ignorance and you can help me out. You know, California, you don't really think about as, you know, like a prime hunting ground. You know, being a southerner and growing up, you know, in South Carolina and now making my home in Georgia, you know, you hear about the Arkansas, the Floridas, you know, Kansas, Nebraska, you know, all those places, but you don't really hear about, you know, California, man. What y'all got going on out in California besides some good music?
Yeah, it's true, you know, and it's one of the reasons why I started my IG page. But, you know, I was trying to get started in this outdoor life. You know, I've been doing a lot of other things. I mean, I grew up in Southern California, so I was skateboarding, we rode BMX bikes and surfing and doing all that stuff. But then I came up here to the north part of the state, and you're a few hours from Yosemite, which is hands down one of the most beautiful places you'll ever visit. If you've been to Modesto, it's not that far to Yosemite. If you make the trip, I always say, if you're coming to California or looking for things to do, even if you just drive through, it's absolutely worth it. So, you know, I got into backpacking and hiking and snowboarding and getting outdoors that way. But California has a great hunting culture. We have right here in Sacramento, the River Delta, where the American and Sacramento rivers come together. You run up north to the Feather River, so there's a ton of fly fishing. There's the, you know, you get out on the ocean charters, you can get out and do that. Waterfowl, there's a strong waterfowl culture right here outside of Sacramento and Davis and West Sacramento. People get out there in Yolo County and do it that way. And then you go up north towards Redding, just, I mean, there's a ton of deer. You got muleys and blacktail in this area. You got deer, or you got pigs, rather, hog hunting year-round. No limit. You just got to buy the tags. And,
wait a minute. Y'all got the hogs in California?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're out here. It's, you know, and I think like 52 of the 58 counties or something like that have wild hogs here in
wow.
California.
Wow. So. That made me perk up right there, because, you know, I like to get after the hogs, you know, like with a bow and stuff. You know, right. I know, you know, obviously, you know what hogs and the damage and stuff that they cause. And so, you know, you get people that, you know, predator hunt them, or not predator, but nuisance hunt them and stuff.
Sure.
But I like, you know, just to get out there and, you know, leisurely hunt them like with a bow. But yeah, wow. Okay. Okay.
We got a little bit of everything going on. Got a little bit of everything.
Now, you said you grew up in Southern California. Where at in Southern California? What made you make the move up to Northern California?
Yeah, so both of my grandfathers were in the military during the 60s and 70s and whatnot. So they were stationed down in Orange County, right in the Huntington Beach area. So my family lived there, both on my dad's side and my mom's side. Everybody just kind of hung out there for a minute. And then later on, when I was about 14, 15, they moved up here where my mom had some family up here outside of Sacramento. And so I've been here ever since, started my own family, got married 17 years ago now. So we're raising our kids up here. It's a beautiful place. You know, we're about an hour from everything. You're about an hour from Tahoe. You're about an hour from San Francisco. You like the coast. You like the mountains. It's got, you know, it's a great location. A lot of Californians don't like to talk about it because everybody thinks, oh, you know, Hollywood or the Bay Area or whatever. But Sacramento, I mean, it's known as the farm to fork capital of the region. Agriculture is really big here. So, you know, there's a lot of interest in good food, and, you know, wild game fits into that picture real nice.
With all of that that's going on in NorCal, like you said, you know, with the Californians not really liking to talk about it or not really being known about it, how was you introduced into the hunting culture?
So it was a personal thing where my dad and my grandfather both hunted back before I could. I mean, I remember seeing my dad come home from hunts when I was really, really young, probably 3 or 4. But short time after that, you know, he was in construction trade. So we moved around a little bit. He was really busy, you know, raising a family. And it was just one of those things that he didn't really do too much as we grew up. And so spending all that time in the outdoors, you know, going backpacking and hiking and doing stuff as I, you know, came into my own, one of the things that I was intrigued by was this idea of being able to create a meal from an animal that is harvested from nature. My dad's dad, my grandpa, he was a cook in the Navy. And so we grew up cooking. I mean, everybody in my family cooked. So quality food was always one of those things that was of interest to me. And the influence here, like I mentioned with California, you know, Sacramento and the farm to fork movement and all that, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of people that take pride in being able to do that. So, you know, there are guys here, you know, they kind of influenced my decision to get involved, like Hank Shaw, who is known as Hunt Gather Cook. He's done some cookbooks, small game, foraging. He does a lot of great stuff all around the country. And, you know, looking into the stuff that those guys are doing, you know, I said, well, you know, what would it take for me to do that? Yeah, I'm sure there's things that I probably walk by every day that are edible. And, you know, if there were a situation like we saw down in, you know, with Hurricane Katrina, with people being shuttled into the Superdome, relying on outside sources for food and water and whatnot, like if that was my family, I'd want to know that I could step outside and go find something to make a meal, right? Not have to worry about government services in order to feed my family just because there's nothing in the grocery store. So that's where my journey started, really, is trying to figure out, you know, how to become more, you know, develop those skills that used to be real common. Like people, it's just what they did. Hunting was just, a given. You see old pictures from like the 40s and 50s, people in their church clothes would step out of a car with a rifle, put a deer down and throw it over the hood, right?
Right, right.
So, yeah, you know, I think we've become a little removed from that because society's become so convenient, but there's always room to grow. And it's one of those things that I've really, found a love for.
Yeah, I think you're being modest about the little removed. I think majority of, you know, America and even, you know, I dare say around the world is a lot removed from the organic process, if you will, of, you know, going out and killing your own food and processing it and consuming it that way. I think we're far removed. Right. From that process. And I also think that people forget, you know, I'm all about technology and I appreciate technology. I love, you know, the technological advances that we've had in our society and stuff. And even when it comes to like our hunting and our hunting weapons. But I think with more technology and of course more options, I think, you know, now people forget that, you know, hey, this was the way that it was done. This was the way that it used to be. Like this is natural. Like there's not anything, you know, foreign or bad about this way of life. And I think a lot of times people forget that.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. You know, I mean, I grew up, reading stories like Call of the Wild and, you know, these different things where you had a young, you know, man who it was his ability to do those things that demonstrated to society that he was worth having around and that he could sustain a family and contribute. And, you know, even further back than that, it was necessary as part of the, you know, as part of the tribe, you had to do something
right
in order to earn your place, right? You had, if you didn't help, you didn't get a place at the table.
You had to earn your keep. I joke with my son all the time. I was like, you know, we do this for fun. You know, we're sportsmen. You know, we enjoy doing it. But God, if we had to do it to live, we'd probably all starve because we're just trying to get, you know, just try to develop the skill sets to bring something home on a regular basis. You know, it's funny. And I just thought about this, you know, all the time, like you read and you see stuff and people are like, it's not about the kill. It's not about the harvest or whatever, you know, it's just about being outdoors and having a good time and being one with nature and, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, I wonder back in the day, did they feel like that? You know, were they just like, oh man, we're just out here soaking up the sun, you know, we're enjoying it. Like, I'm pretty sure that's not the attitude that they carried back in the day.
No. Yeah, I'm sure. You know, you come home empty handed, the missus is looking across the table like, what do you mean you didn't get anything? You know, I mean, that would have been a rough way to go.
What do you mean you had a good time watching the sun come up?
Yeah, exactly. You know, babe, you had to be there. The experiences with the fellas, right. You know, the campfire, the stars, it was wonderful.
Right.
Our cupboards are empty, sucker. Get out there and get some meat.
Now, I want to circle back real quick. You said the farm to fork movement in California. Explain to us what that's all about and just backtrack to how that was part of your influence as well.
So initially, farm to fork was supposed to be an effort that really reinforced the value of small family farms and the attention that they give the land that they take care of, the produce that comes from that land, the animals that are cultivated on that land. And it's become kind of more of a marketing thing where you go to any grocery store and it's like, hey, this is local. It came from a farm 60 miles away. And you look at this family farm, right? It's still owned by, but it's a huge commercial operation. It's completely different. But there is still a strong contingent of folks that are really trying to keep it pure, right? To support the principle, core principle of what Farm to Fork is really supposed to be. And that's the idea that you could have healthy animals raised in an ethical way. You know, and obviously there are going to be detractors that say there really is no ethical way to end an animal's life. That set aside, I choose to eat meat. There are a lot of us that do. And it's kind of nice to know that there are people out there that are trying to raise the quality of life that these animals have. And I mean, from a nutrition standpoint, from a health standpoint, there are a lot of benefits to raising organic, grass-fed, pasture-raised animals. But for me personally, it was like, okay, well, if that's good, what's even better than that? And so that got me really, you know, looking at the fact that, I mean, there's a river, you know, not 5 minutes from my house. If I go and pull fish out of that river, where's that fish been? Turkeys literally walk through my neighborhood and they seem to know exactly where the boundary lines are.
Yeah.
And where they can respectfully and where they know that, you know, they need to duck because an arrow or shotgun blast is headed their way. So you know, there's an abundance of wildlife here in Northern California. I mean, literally deer and turkey and quail and, I mean, you know, all kinds of small game. I mean, there's just a ton of different opportunities. And for me, it was like, I'm already out. I'm hiking. I'm camping. I'm four-wheeling. You know, I'm out on these trails. I'm in these streams. I'm in these ponds. I'm in these mountains. And there are animals here. So a lot of the downtime that I was spending, you know, doing other things, maybe reading or hanging out or, you know, throwing a line in the pond, you know, I wanted to take it to that next level of fishing is cool. Done that ever since I was pretty small and have enjoyed it. I'm not a fisherman right. by any means, but sure. recreationally, I've happened upon fish from time to time that like my bait. You know, I just thought, you know, I see deer all the time. I enjoy venison. I've had friends that have been kind enough to let me partake in their harvest. So what would it take to contribute to the harvest as well? So, you know, my wife, we have a freezer in the garage. She reminds me constantly that it's
wow.
empty. Other than a few things maybe we picked up from Costco. So, you know, I've taken it as a personal mission to develop those skills. Like, you know, like we mentioned, it wasn't that long ago when it was just kind of the majority of people knew how to do these things. And I want to gain that back.
Now, you mentioned, you know, your wife reminds you constantly about the state of the freezer. Does she go out with you? Does she participate, or is she just kind of waiting to reap the spoils that go to the victor?
Yeah. No, my wife is supportive in her own way. My first rifle was a gift from my wife. She said, I know that you've been thinking about going hunting. Let's go get you a rifle for our anniversary. So okay. That was one of the things that she done. But yeah, anytime that I've said, here's what I'd like to do with regard to hunting, you know, if it's taking a week and going, you know, up and looking for deer, or like tonight, you know, my mother-in-law is here visiting and I told her, hey, it's opening weekend for turkey. I'm going to go out Sunday evening. She's like, go have fun. Hope you get something. She's very supportive,
nice.
But she doesn't want to see me clean it. She's just wants to see it be meat. Like she doesn't want to see the animal. She knows where it comes from, but she doesn't want to see the process.
Right. Right.
For a girl who grew up in the Bay Area and like very, you know, urban, this is a big step for her. So I'm grateful. She's very supportive and, you know, she makes it all possible. And my son, who's 15, he just completed his hunter safety. She's been very supportive of that. And so she's encouraging he and I to spend that time together out in the woods. So yeah, she doesn't want to see it. She doesn't, you know, she knows what the process is. You know, she just doesn't want to be there until it looks like the thing that she picks up in the grocery store.
Right. So. And it's funny because my daughter is kind of the same. Well, she's the same way in that she's supportive of certain animals. Like if I tell her we're going, you know, to trap raccoons, or if we're going, you know, to hunt coyotes or whatever, she supports that because, you know, they can harm the deer and harm the turkey. So that's all right. Well, those in her eyes, those are bad animals. So go for it. But
right.
deer,
right.
turkeys, anything like that, rabbits, off limits. You know, what did the deer do to you is what I get often. Until
sure.
until the deer comes home in the form of meatballs and hamburgers and, you know, steaks and stuffed shells and stuff like that. I always tell people, you know, she gives me and her brother grief about going out and going hunting and stuff until the food's done. And then she's got a plate out. So, you know, it's like, you know, you can't, I guess you can have it both ways, but it's just like, you know, you should come out and see how this goes. But she wants no part of it. He will come out. My problem with him is I can't get him to practice enough with his bow. Whenever I go hunting, he's like, oh, sure. I want to go. It's like, all right, you come on. You can hold the camera. You know, you can take pictures. I'll show you, you know, how to run the camera and stuff. And he's been out with me,
right,
you know, doing that. And I've taken him hog hunting a couple times. But my thing with him is just like, you know, you got to pick up that thing in practice. You know, you can't just do it when you see me do it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you gotta want it. So
it's
a work in progress, but it's good that, you know, you can get the family involved. And like you said, that your wife's supportive. I like how you phrase that. You phrase that like a man that's been married, what'd you say, 17 years? You phrase that like a man that's been married 17 years. It's like, my wife is supportive in her own way. That's, you know, I respect that. That's great. I am not married, so that's why I can say that. So
I can understand where your daughter's coming from too, because I mean, in coming into this hunting game, and I say game, it's not a game, but this lifestyle, you know, there are things that take place like predator control and different things that I haven't experienced. I know why they happen, but at the same time, like hunting down mountain lions, I had to see several videos in order to really understand the why behind some of that stuff. And even still, I know that it happens. I know predation control and all this. I know why it's needed. I understand where it fits into the puzzle. It's not something that is, you know, a driver for me personally, but it's taken some adjustment. And same thing, like there was the recent story about the guy down in Texas that went over to, it was a Palestine or whatever, and he got the rare goat for like $100,000, and, you know, people were in an uproar about that. So in hunting, there's this scale of experiences and different things that people do. And I think this universal acknowledgement that as hunters, we are accepting responsibility for taking something's life. But if we're going to do that, you know, can we say, okay, well, you know, I'll shoot rabbits, but I won't shoot deer, and anybody that does is a nasty so-and-so. I mean, there's a lot of understanding that it's a very dynamic experience. And, you know, I know that
I think the word that you made, well, I'll say it. I won't put words in your mouth. I don't want to do that. But to me, the word is hypocrisy. And a lot of times we in the hunting community, we are our own worst enemy, because, you know, if you don't do it, everybody's way is the right way, and not to mention the only way, in which and sometimes that, to me, that kind of thinking is very detrimental. And, you know, I admit, I'll tell anybody in a heartbeat, you know, this is only my fourth season, you know, out here actively doing this. So, you know, I haven't been hunting, you know, all my life or 35, 40 years. You know, this is not something that's been handed down or whatever. This is something that as an adult I picked up because I don't golf, you know, I don't do all that stuff like that.
Exactly.
You know, this is what I enjoy.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, in my short time doing this, I feel like a lot of times we as hunters are our own worst enemies with our hypocritical thinking. It's like, oh, well, you killed, you know, you can kill a deer, but, you know, if you kill a deer at a deer ranch or something like that, then, oh my God, you're not a real hunter and blah, 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 and like all this other stuff. And I just think the hypocrisy just does more damage than good. And also, if you're not careful, it could turn away somebody that wants to come in and wants to join, you know, this kind of lifestyle. So
totally agree. And that's, you know, the one of the things that I've learned as well is that experience, right? So to me, it's a matter of, is what the person is doing legal or illegal? Because culturally, I mean, if you look at any type of tradition, there are things that take place, you know, in every country, every neighborhood around the world where you probably wouldn't understand if you were just dropped into that situation. But if historically it's acceptable there, culturally it's acceptable there, the tradition is, if it's acceptable there, then who am I to say, right? I mean,
exactly.
You know, I mean, I didn't grow up using chopsticks, but I understand that there's a billion people in China that have grown up using, and I enjoy it. Like, you know, it's something that I've shared in, and I can understand it. Hunting to me is the same way, where people, if they don't have that in their, you know, in their background, if they aren't actively engaged in it, if they don't have friends and family, then they probably aren't going to understand what is and isn't acceptable from a tradition standpoint or from a cultural standpoint. So, you know, poaching, obviously, bad.
Right.
But, you know, if a village says, hey, we are stewards of this area and we have this animal available and the funding goes to schools and hospitals and whatever. I mean, they're the stewards of that. Who am I to say that that shouldn't exist or it, you know, should be done a different way? I don't live in their shoes. I haven't been in that set of circumstances. So if that's what's happening, you know, and hopefully, you know, it's being done responsibly. It's a very complex situation. And I understand why it gets people fired up and why, you know, some people get upset about it. But like you said, I'm hoping that we can present these things in a way that encourages responsible participation. You know, I know for me personally, there are like, you know, different things that I've seen online and in social media where it didn't feel right for me. So, you know, maybe it's a follower that I lose or, you know, somebody that I don't follow because it didn't fit for me. But I'm not going to go on there and berate the person because what they're doing is not illegal.
Right.
It's just not the way that I would like to see it done. So, you know, you got to figure out where you're going to stand on those things.
Well, you know, I always say, you know, the scroll button works. Use it. The unfollow button, you know, the scroll button works, the unfollow button works. I mean, and if you, you know, feel that strong about it, you can always, you know, go up and go into your settings and hide and all these other things. I mean, you know, social media has been awesome. It's allowed us to connect and reach, you know, people that we may not have otherwise done. But I mean, sometimes too, I think people, they abuse it. And like I said, it can be a detriment, but as I always say to these things, you know, what do I know? I'm just one guy. So, but I do want to circle back to, you know, you said something that kind of got me thinking, like with the cougars and stuff. You guys got a pretty decent cougar population, and you were talking about, you know, like predator hunting and stuff. You know, my general rule of thumb the last, my first 4 years doing this has been, I'm not going to hunt anything that's trained to kill me. Now that's kind of been my rule of thumb. But here recently, I was talking to someone, Ryan, the Buddha, who's actually going to be coming up on, in a couple episodes on my podcast, Cheap Pop. He was saying to me about bear hunting and how, you know, good the bear meat and stuff is. And he's, you know, like really the first person that I've talked to that really put over bear meat. And he was, you know, all about it. He was like, oh, you got to get your points. You know, you got to go out and try it. Like I said, my general rule of thumb is not hunting anything that has basically spent its entire life being trained to kill me. But it's one of those things that, you know, people enjoy and people do. My question is with the cougar population and stuff, and you said, you know, you haven't really done a whole lot of predator hunting. Is that something that you want to get into? Is that something that you want to try? Like what you're thinking about that?
Yeah. So in California, and I'm not, I haven't looked into it a ton, but it's my understanding that the use of dogs is prohibited, which from what I understand, like the houndsmen and their culture around bears and cougars in particular, you know, panthers, mountain lions, you know, like a mountain lion hunt without hounds is, from what I understand, is really just kind of, you're going to lose. I mean, it's not the same experience. That being said, I've heard great things about eating mountain lion. I personally have had bear and it was delicious.
Really?
So, oh yeah. Yeah. It was, as a kid, one of my dad's friends, who's a big hunter, he put on a spread and we had moose and elk and venison and bear. Bear was a little, it has a reputation for being a little greasy,
right?
But I think, you know, again, the modern preparations, you know, people like Steve Ranilla and Hank Shaw, like all these different guys that have this kitchen experience and wild game experience, they've, I think, transformed that. So a lot of the stuff that people have held traditionally from a preparation standpoint, there are a lot of alternatives. My experience with bear meat was that it was great. I remember as a kid having these giant teriyaki sweet and sour bear meatballs and just digging in both fists. It was delicious.
Okay.
I mean, you're right. I mean, for California, we do have a pretty robust mountain lion population. And here where I live, it's, you know, there have been over the last few years, well, I say few years, but, you know, since I've been aware and paying attention, the occasional mountain lion attack. And it's just a matter of human encroachment into a natural area. And like I mentioned, this is a very healthy ecosystem with regard to water supply, food sources. Predators are going to follow that. I mean, we can't have all these deer and pigs and turkey and not expect predators to to thrive as well.
Right, because so it's food for them too.
Control. Exactly, exactly. I always say, you know, we're all food at some point. Everything is food at some point. So, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, for the mountain lion situation, I know personally, like when I go out, even when I go out just backpacking, I carry a sidearm.
Definitely.
I've camped in places where I could hear bears active and I couldn't see them, which was even more unnerving because there were deer not 2 feet outside of my tent. And I could hear a bear up in the hill and could not see the thing. It did not make itself visible. And I looked actively to try and identify where it was so I could move to a safe distance. And it just held back. And to your point, it's a predator. Bears are known to hunt people actively if they are, you know, under pressure.
Right, right.
And they will do things that prey animals won't do. A prey animal will depart. It will leave your vicinity and not look back. A bear will run off and then circle around behind you.
And see that's very unnerving.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly. And so, you know, if we're continuing to grow as a state, I mean, California is the most populous state in the country. It's the fifth largest economy in the world. People continue to come here.
Right.
And we continue to build out into these habitats. There's going to be, I mean, you can't move into a new neighborhood and not expect to know your neighbor.
Well,
that's
quite possibly the best way I've ever heard it put, because, you know, back home in South Carolina, especially in the coastal areas, you know, like down in Charleston and, you know, Georgetown, these places like that, Myrtle Beach, they're constantly, like you said, constantly expanding. And a lot of these housing developments and apartments, I mean, you're basically building on wetlands, you know, or converting
right.
wetlands, or you're either building close to wetlands and you got to put up these, you know, don't feed the gators, you know, watch out for gators and stuff. Man, they were there. You know, you guys decided to
right.
build out there. It kind of comes with the territory. You know, I bought, you yep. know, land out in middle Georgia, and basically it's a pine and hardwood forest. Guess what? There are deer out there. There are also bobcats. There are also rattlesnakes. I mean, the first day on my property, we killed a rattlesnake. Kind of goes with the territory. So, I mean,
exactly.
you know, exactly. it's what comes along with it. So you can't really be upset. You know, people are like, well, you know, well, why are they here? And da 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 da. They were there first. You know, just because you put up a fancy building doesn't mean that
right.
they're just going to turn tail and run. So,
yeah, it's. Yeah, I say it's all the outdoors to them. Just because we pour concrete and put a building on it, it's still the outdoors. They don't care. And if you've spent any time in the woods, you can see, you know, up here, up in the Sierra Nevada, they cut all these fire roads for access for the logging companies and for fire control and the wildfires and stuff. But when you go up there, you can see the animals use that ease of access to get to watering sources, to food sources, whatnot. Just because you pour concrete doesn't negate the fact that that might have been a game trail at some point.
Right.
They still follow what their instinct has told them to do. Hey, if we go in this direction, we're going to get to the river. We're going to get to the creek. We're going to, you know, get to a place where we need to be. So you put a neighborhood in the smack dab in the middle of a deer habitat. Well, yeah, you're going to get predators. You're going to get all of that traffic. And they're going to become more wary, but they don't care like that you've moved into their neighborhood necessarily. And it is their neighborhood. We're moving into their neighborhood.
Right.
So, you know,
encroachment on our part.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, let's transition into your project, The Hunting Student. I was checking it out. I came across it. I think actually Clint Cadet from Urban Archery NYC was the one that turned me on to your page. What is The Hunting Student and what made you come up with that?
Yeah. So to me, what I was looking at is, you know, my interest in the outdoors. I was trying to find other people who were in a similar set of circumstances. So I was actually talking to my wife, and she's the one that says, you know, babe, you've got a unique voice because you're a person of color. You're getting involved in hunting, you know, later in life. You know, we didn't grow up like, you know, with the tradition of fathers and grandfathers and whatnot, you know, showing each other the ropes and, you know, where the sweet honey holes are and all that stuff. She's like, you know, why don't you, you know, do some research and see, you know, how you can educate yourself to become more effective and, you know, maybe share some of that stuff that you learn with other people who might be in a similar, you know, in a similar place. And like you said at the outset, California is not really known as a hunter-friendly type of state. People will say easily, it's not, you know, one of the easiest states, especially when we're bumping right up against the great, you know, hunting up in Oregon, or, you know, you look to the east over in Idaho or Wyoming or Montana. I mean, I can drive to Montana and, you know, in a day and a half. So I was looking at all these things online and I'm like, man, I'm doing all this research. And one of the things I found myself bumping up against all the time is just nobody really talking about what the Western hunting experience is locally to California. And then as I started watching the people that were talking about how to get involved in Western states hunting in particular, I mean, just like, you know, there's all these great resources, but I'm like, there's not a whole lot of brown people represented in this culture.
Right.
And I know they exist. Because I go to, you know, I go to the Sportsman's Expos and I go to different shows and I'm like, I see them there, but in the media, there isn't really a strong representation. So for me, the hunting student represents a resource where early on, what I said is I'm going to put this thing together. And my personal philosophy is I don't have an ego about my hunting experience and I don't get involved in the politics.
Right.
That's what this platform is going to represent, because I want people to be able to come in, ask any question, share any experience. Try and figure out who they want to be. If they're looking to get outside and enjoy the outdoors in whatever capacity that is, and I've highlighted hunting, but you know, I don't care what the question is. If you want to talk about rock climbing, you want to talk about, you know, windsurf, whatever it is. If you're trying to get outside and you're not sure where to go, being a student, I mean, this is an experience where you hear guys that have been in it for 5 years that have a wealth of knowledge. You have guys that have been in it for 30 years that don't know nothing. But if we, you know, if we can humble ourselves,
right,
and,
right,
and share, right? And that's why I was just like, you know what? I'm on Instagram to kind of stay connected to friends and family. But this is just a personal project where I was like, you know what? I'm going to learn. I'm going to share what I learn. I'm going to try and minimize some of the learning curve for some of those folks that might be trying to get their feet wet. And I know, like, when I went to try and get started, like, just buying a rifle, I had so many questions. And the people that were supposed to be helping me were kind of like, well, do you know what caliber you want? Do you know which model you want? Do you know which scope you want? Do you know which range you want on your scope? I'm like, man, I have no idea.
Right.
Like, I'm trying to figure all this out. Like, you tell me if I should be looking at a 3-9 scope or a 10-, you know, whatever. Like, why? What's the difference? Here in California, I'm just getting started. Don't point me just the most expensive thing that I can afford, right, but tell me why these things are important for me to know. And so that's what I'm trying to figure out. I'm trying to connect with people like yourself, my guy down in SoCal here, Guy. He's on Western Contours podcast. He's been a great resource for me. Guy, shout out to him, because that guy, I mean, he just said, hey, keep doing what you're doing, because, you know, a lot of people are kicking over those same rocks. So if we can share that knowledge and encourage people to get outside, I mean, it's beautiful out there, man. I mean, with all the stress and the grind and everything that people are dealing with, especially here in California, there's this facade of Holly weird and, you know, people being plastic. And I mean, there's some really good down-to-earth people here. And I've met a lot of them, you know, through this experience, getting out, grinding, spending time on the hill, getting out and doing some fishing, whatever it is, hiking. I mean, that can unite people. And where we're at, you know, in society today, if it's just a little bit, I see that as a good thing.
No doubt. Definitely. I mean, it was the same way with me. You know, like I said, when I started, it was just kind of like, you know, hey, I'm going to go try this. And I remember, you know, my first experience, you know, going to an archery shop and, you know, just taking like a little introductory class, whatever. I think it was like 20, 30 minutes. You know, they kind of walk you through, you know, how to shoot a compound bow how to shoot a traditional bow. And, you know, they go through all the steps and everything of archery. And I remember the guy just being like, he was cool as far as like explaining everything, but he was just like, you know, everybody wants to shoot a compound bow, nobody wants to take the time to learn how to shoot a traditional bow and the patience and blah 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 blah, blah that goes on. And I was just like, you know, I sat through it, and you know, I got through it, and I was just like, all right, yep, I can do this. And I went down to the Bass Pro and I bought a compound bow because I knew that's what I wanted. I just wanted to make sure before I invested in it that it was something that, okay, it's not as hard, you know, to get started as I thought it was, and I'm just going to go down here and then I'm going to do what I wanted to do anyway. And I'm glad I did, because, you know, I got into it. I started shooting it. I love it. It's my favorite form of hunting and bow hunting. And I'm hunt with a compound bow for as long as my shoulders let me. So, but when I started, you know, like you said, just looking for sources to ask questions and to be able to ask questions without being judged or berated and stuff, you know, going back to social media, right. Everybody yeah. is a freaking keyboard warrior. They put stuff on, you know, social yep. media and they, you know, troll and say things, well, you need to have tough skin and not be a slow flake and all this other BS. When the only thing you want to do is just ask yeah. a question to get an answer so you can go about your business. So that's why, you know, pages like yours,
right,
they're invaluable, man. It, you know, I applaud what you're trying to do out here.
I appreciate that so much, because I mean, honestly, when I started it, it was just really about me trying to figure out my own way. But I've had people reach out to me time and again where they're just like, man, I'm so glad that your page exists because you've helped me out. So like, I had no idea, you know, I had no idea that people would identify with what I was trying to do so readily. And I'm grateful that, you know, I'm able to do it, because I feel like, you know, like I said, you know, if I can put myself out there and just take the ego out of it and just ask the hard questions and ask the simple questions, things that, you know, I mean, you know, buying boots, you know, it's not really that big of a deal, but I just share my experience and it's like, okay, well, you know, what kinds of things are you looking for? What's important to you? How do you do it? Where can you go? Like, really helpful people who are just really trying to do the right thing without their own prejudices. I mean, I've heard some stuff, you know, like people getting trolled because they bought, you know, one type of camo instead of another. It's like, dude, who right. cares? Who cares? If you can help somebody not just get outside, but stay outside, like get into the outdoors and do the thing that they love, that's what it should be about. Just because you feel like, hey, I'm hardcore this or I'm hardcore that, and you don't measure up to my right. personal, well, right. so what? So what? Who are you, right? I mean, there's probably something that that person does that you could never do, but you just don't know it because they're stepping over into your world where you feel established and you feel confident and you feel like, hey, I've got the expertise and I know. Well, encourage their growth. Don't try and stunt it, man. Just get out of the way.
Yeah, it is hard for, you know, people, like I'm in a lot of like groups, Facebook groups and stuff. And, you know, I see people ask questions and stuff. And I applaud them on one hand because they're brave. And then on the other hand, it's just like, godly, man. The guy or the, you know, the gal is just asking a question because they genuinely don't know. They're just genuinely asking right. a question. But, you right. know, like you said, as long as you are trying to get into it and trying to learn and stuff, I mean, man, you need all the encouragement you can get.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, the outdoor lifestyle is not easy. You're not picking an easy path, especially with regard to hunting, because people feel very passionately about whether or not hunting should be allowed for whatever their personal, moral, ethical reasons are. So if you're trying to get started and you got the antis on one side
right.
and then the people that are doing the thing that you want to do and they're beating you down on the other, and then you finally get out there and it's hard. It's hard to get started. You know, you go out. I went out for 4 years looking for deer. I have yet to kill a deer. Last year I came my closest.
Okay.
But figuring out like public land, where to go, when to go,
right,
you know, what the animals are doing, how to get in the right spot. And it's different, like back east, you guys, I mean, they do the food plots and they do the tree stands and you do leases. Here I'm looking at straight public land, walk into the woods where there's 100,000 other people doing the same thing that I'm doing, trying to harvest an animal.
Right.
It's hard. And if I didn't love being outside so much, if I was just like measuring my success based on what I see on social media and the fact that I haven't harvested an animal in all that time and the money and energy and effort that I've put into it so far, like if I didn't love just being outside so much, like it would be easy to get turned around and be like, you know what? That's for the birds. Get out of here. I got better things to do with my time and money, right?
Right.
But that experience, like I want that experience around for my grandkids. I want them to be able to go out and know, hey, I can harvest an animal and bring that home for my family and share in a meal and share that with my neighbors and enjoy the outdoors. Like if that's not around, I mean, honestly, I'm, you know, you got to weep for the future if they can't, you know, if they don't have that freedom anymore.
Right. Or have the opportunity, the opportunity and the places to be able to go, you know, to participate. So
exactly.
So for you, like you said, getting started again, you know, obviously you hunted, you know, when you were younger or fished, you know, when you were younger, you know, had yep. access to the culture and whatnot. So as an adult now, you've been going at it for about 4 years, you say?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, we're on the same kind of timeline, you know, with myself. You know, like I said, I picked up a bow. I was able to go hog hunting, harvest my first hog, you know, maybe about 4 or 5 months in, got a deer the year later. And then I took up duck hunting. And I mean, now you want to talk about another bunch of self-serving people. I'm not going to get into that, but I tell you what though, if you can do it, you know, duck hunting, goose hunting, you know, any kind of waterfowl, man, that is right. a blast. And I've seen people and I've talked to a few people on social media about the waterfowl hunting and duck hunting and stuff out in California and in the Pacific Northwest. And it's on one of my to-do lists to go out there and check it out. But I mean, I feel like anyway, I don't think I got any signs of slowing down or stopping. You know, I harvest my first doe on my own land. You know, I've had my own land now for about 3 years. I finally took a doe off of it. Very proud of that. Had a close encounter with a nice sized buck. Couldn't quite, you know, seal the deal. But I mean, that's all part of it. And it's all part of the experience and you're learning. Exactly. And hopefully in the learning, it's making you better.
Right, right. And I mean, like you said at the outset, right? I mean, when you compare it to, you know, walking around on a golf course, I mean, I'm with you, right? I'd much rather, if I go for a walk and I bring home an animal, that's a much more fulfilling experience in my book personally. Not to begrudge anybody that golfs. I have a ton of friends that golf. Golf's very big here in California. But, you know, I made that decision too, where I said, you know, at this point in my life, I want to develop those skills so that when I'm heading into my 50s and I'm heading into my 60s and hopefully, you know, even in my 70s, I'll be able to do that same thing. And props to you for having success early on, because I think that, you know, I mean, that stokes that fire that much faster. But, you know, those of us out there that had the same success and, you know, they need that encouragement. And I'm glad your voice is out there doing what you're doing, because I hear the stories, you know, listening to your show, and it gets me fired up. You know, I hear, like you said, you pick up your bow, you've been in it. And I think we're about the same age. I just turned 42.
Yep. I'll be 42 in August.
For me, like hearing other people. I'm like, man, so I'm not alone. You know, it can be done. And that's awesome to hear. I love it.
It definitely, and I consider myself very fortunate. You know, I've put in the work myself, but with my schedule and whatnot, I go on a lot of guided hunts, because I just feel like if you don't have time to scout, and if you can't take the time to scout, then you're pretty much pissing in the wind. But that should not, you know, hinder you from being able to participate. So I am fortunate that, you know, I've had some success early, because I know me personally, you know, I'm not one of these guys that, you know, loves the process. Like, I love the results. I have no problem admitting that. Of course, you do the process, you do the work, and, you know, I do the work on my own land and whatnot. But yeah, no, I do like going out and, you know, learning from these guides that I go with as well, so I can know what to do and take back some of the stuff and try it and, you know, apply it, you know, on my own land and whatnot. But no, I have no problem admitting that. You know, I've been very fortunate to go on some great guided hunts and work with some great guides, and they've put me on some good animals, and I've just made sure that for all the hard work that they do, the very least that I can do is show up, be prepared. And if they put me in a position to, you know, to make a kill or make a harvest, don't go out there and screw it up because you haven't been practicing or you haven't been doing what you have to do to seal the deal. So, I mean, that's kind of been my story. But with the hunting student and with THS, as I refer to it, you know, THS was my high school growing up, Thomasville High School. So that was another thing. When I saw that, I was like, oh, THS, all right, that's pretty cool. Sounds like it's been received pretty well. Like, have you had like a lot of challenges or received any kind of, you know, pushback or anything like that? It's been received pretty good, haven't it?
Yeah, you know, I was surprised, honestly, because, you know, like I said, at first it was just about me putting myself out there to try and, you know, create a platform where I could network and learn as much as possible for my own personal benefit. But then when people started reaching out to me and saying, hey, man, your page has helped me out, like, keep doing what you're doing. I was like, really? Okay, you know, and that's where, you know, I changed my direction a little bit, in that I stopped just thinking about my own circumstances as much. Like, I still share my stories because that's what I have at my disposal, and I want to put that content out there just in case somebody can use it. But, you know, I've really kind of redirected to, again, network and connect with people like yourself. I can point people to and say, hey, you know, you have this question, you have that set of circumstances, you're trying to figure this out, like, go talk to so-and-so, or follow this person, or try this product, because either it's helped me, or I've heard good things, or at least give some kind of a guiding light. And so that's where, you know, I've shortened it, you know, from the hunting student, you know, worked with a great guy, Jesse Ray, who helped me create the logo for THS, and really started thinking of it more as a platform for people who are interested in anything outdoors. But, you know, again, because hunting seems to be the most polarizing element of the outdoors experience, just really providing a little bit of extra support for those people that are trying to get their feet wet in the hunting world.
Definitely. Definitely. Now, big picture, you know, long term, what do you see THS turning into? I mean, I see you got the website already set up. Are you going to produce some videos? Like, what's your long term, or even the next thing? What's the next step for you?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because, I mean, honestly, I started this thing. I mean, it's only been, what, maybe 3 or 4 months. And the transition happened so quickly, you know, it really got me thinking about what it needs to represent, what I want it to be. And I was talking to someone earlier, because I just put a quick question on my Instagram story. I just said, you know, if you guys, like, would you rep THS swag? Like, if I put stuff out there, you know, would it be something that you'd want to represent? And overwhelmingly, the message was, yeah, you know, I'd rock it. You know, it's a cool thing. The logo looks nice. But, you know, I didn't want to just put another t-shirt on the market, or another, you know, decal or hat or whatever. I wanted it to represent something. And so that's what I'm trying to figure out in developing the web content. You said, want to, you know, put some videos out there that mean something. Maybe it's a little bit different than what people have seen before. And just leverage the platform, not only so that it's giving to the community from an educational standpoint, but the revenue, you know, any revenue that's generated will be used to give back as well. I'm not a wealthy dude. I'm just exploring this thing out of pocket, really. But, you know, if we're going to sell hats and t-shirts, like, what does that represent? It's not just going to be about, you know, me, you know, making a quick buck. I want it to go back into the things that are helping the community grow and thrive. So that's what I'm trying to nail down. I'm trying to figure out what that framework needs to look like, what the commitment's going to need to be from me. Am I going to need help? You know, what direction does that need to be focused in? So we're exploring all that right now. So I'm open to suggestions. You know, at this point, it's in its infancy. So anything's possible. You know, whatever we do, I want it to be a force for good and for positive change. So what that ends up looking like, you know, like, you know, whether it's youth programs or, you know, conservation or other ecological, or, I mean, you know, I'm still doing a lot of digging, trying to do the research so that we can figure that out and put it out there in a way that will, you know, make a lot of sense to support the effort to help people get their toes wet, get out there, get outside, enjoy what, you know, nature has to offer, and do it in a way that's supportive and contributing to, you know, what we'll be leaving behind, you know, for our kids and our grandkids.
Definitely. Definitely. Now, a couple more and then I'm going to get you out of here. What is your favorite method? What is your preferred method? And I know you said you just started, you know, with the rifle. Do you like the bow, or are you getting more comfortable with the rifle? What's your favorite method?
So I'm all about the season extender, man. I rifle is fun. Bow is fun. I picked up the bow. My good buddy, Perry Selk, who's helped me out a lot, he let me borrow one of his bows, because I have a friend who has turkey on her property, and she said, yeah, you know, if you want to come and get one, that's cool, but it's only a 10-acre property. She's like, I don't want shotguns going off, so bring a bow. So I picked up a bow for the first time, and I shot a little bit of archery when I was a kid, like simple, like, you know, little bows.
Sure.
Not this new age compound technology. These things are incredible. And so I had one. I borrowed Perry's for 3 weeks. I go, like, no, this isn't going to do. I got to go get my own. So yeah, picked up a Bowtech Carbon Icon and have been practicing with that. Love it. It is so much fun. I just want to develop that skill so badly. So I'm all about whatever gets me in the field the longest. So started with a rifle, you know, realized that by adding archery, you know, I get a little bit longer season. I added a shotgun to the arsenal because, you know, I was like, all right, birds, there's a ton of great bird activity here in Northern California. So doing some quail hunting, small game, haven't done waterfowl yet, but I'm looking to have that experience as well.
Definitely.
And yeah, I'm just about, like, if I can be in the woods, that's my happy place. Be in the woods, on the water, whatever it is, get me outside. I don't care if it's a slingshot, a boomerang, a spear, you know, bow and arrow, my trusty 308, like just give it to me so I can get out there and get out of the city. And I'm a happy man as long as I can do that.
See, here's the thing, you know, for me, I love my bow. You know, I pick up my shotgun, you know, to do waterfowl. I think I'm going to try to take a turkey this year with a shotgun, even though that pattern process has really kicked my butt and it's very frustrating. But I'm going to try it. I'm going to try to take a turkey with a shotgun. The thing about the bow, man, it'll keep you in the woods from start to finish, especially like Georgia. And then, you know, I hunt a little bit of Wisconsin, Texas, South Carolina.
Right.
A lot of places have, you know, like their rifle season or their muzzle loader or, you know, primitive weapons is what they call it in Georgia. But bow season, you talk about an extender, you can get out there from day one and then go to the end. You know, you don't have to worry about changing out because of, you know, muzzle loader or whatever. The other thing too, I don't know how it is in California, but I know in Georgia and some other places, say like if deer season is, you know, September 3rd or September 5th, whatever, to January 3rd. That's in most parts of Georgia. In what we call Metro Atlanta, like the counties that in the Metro Atlanta area, deer season goes all the way to January 31st, archery only.
Right.
And the most of the record state record deer in Georgia come from those Metro Atlanta counties. Why? Because it goes back to what we're talking about. Suburban area, hiding in plain sight. That's where the big boys are. So, you know, when people, you know, say season extender and stuff, you know, being able to do multiple weapons, man, nothing says season extender to me anymore than a compound bow. But that's my, you know, that's my preference.
No, I hear you on that. And it's been a revelation for me because I love the serenity of the bow experience. I mean, like, when you pull the trigger, I pull the trigger on my rifle, everybody knows. I mean, for miles, right? Everybody knows that thing's going. Right. You can shoot a bow all day long and people don't even know. I mean, I practice in my backyard every week and my neighbors probably have no idea what's going on back there.
Right.
What I would say, though, is here in California, the Sierra Nevada terrain, there are some activities. I mean, like mule deer hunting. Mule deer is hard enough by itself, but getting up on those animals in this terrain, a lot of those shots are only in my ability, where I'm at today. Maybe it'll change as I become more experienced, but having the rifle allows me that new element, right? It adds another layer to the depth and the experience and the skill set. So I hear you. I mean, the bows, like I said, it's been so much fun to learn, and I'm absolutely 100% all in on my, you know, I had it out today, trying to get my turkey today. It didn't go so well that Tom was hanging out.
I was going to say, how did that go? How did that go for you? Because you said you went out. Did you get the call any? Did you see any birds? How did that go for you?
Saw them driving in, got to the property where I'm allowed to hunt. Had a couple of hens that passed through my shooting lane exactly where I anticipated birds come. But this Tom, this dude was hanging out for the better part of 2 hours. I hear him on one corner. 20 minutes later, on the other corner. Calling to him. He's talking back. That dude would not come in. I mean, even to here in California, shooting hours end at 5 p.m. And I was like, I don't care.
Okay.
I'm not going to shoot him, but I want to see if I can get this joker to come in. And he hung out, and right around 6:30, sundown was about 7:25, right around 6:30, he just stopped talking. So I still hung out, though. I was like, well, all these hens keep passing through my shooting lane. I'm going to see if he comes through here, and he never came around. But I'm going to go back out there tomorrow morning. I'm going to be out there before dawn. I'm going to wait and see if I get that joker, because I know he's hanging out. But
are you running decoys, or what are you? You got any decoys out there? Or
I'm going just straight, just DIY brush blind with a diaphragm mouth call, and just you know, I've got this little area where on my friend's property out there where, you know, I've just kind of set it up. I'm trying, like, it's a matter of like personal fulfillment at this point to like get it done without the decoy, without, you know, any extra. But
sure,
I've been humbled. I might have to go. I was thinking about it today. I'm like, man, if I had a hen laying down out there, maybe it would have caught his eye. I don't know, but it's a great experience. I mean, I learn something every time. I love it. And you know, at some point, I mean, I'm all in. I got to get him or one of his friends. I don't care. I'm not picky.
Right. Now, what out in California, what do you guys got? What, Easterns?
Yeah, Rio's mostly, actually. But
really?
Yeah, we get. I mean, a little bit of everything except those Osceolas.
Yeah, the Osceolas. Yeah,
yeah,
Osceolas. Down in Florida.
Yeah, yep. we get some Miriams. We get some Easterns. Get some Rios. Mostly Rios up here where we're at. Yeah, there's some good looking birds. There's some handsome toms prancing around. You see groups, you know, 20, 30 thick. And
wow,
yeah, I mean, it's beautiful. It is so tempting. And I mean, literally, like, I saw a group on outside of the riverbank on my way home today. Can't shoot there because it's a state park, but in the middle lane, there was a tom that had been dumb enough to try and cross the road. And so my wife's like, there's one. I can't. It doesn't do me any good.
Right. You're like, it doesn't quite work like that. Yeah. No, I hear you. Now, the thing with Miriams and Rios, I had a fella tell me last year when I was hunting my Miriam, you can't overcall them. And I think that's the fun part of hunting those birds, the Miriams and Rios, because Easterns, they're a little finicky. Osceolas are even more finicky. But Miriams and Rios, every 15 minutes, hit them with something. Hit them with a little something different. If it's not working, then hit them with something else. But that's one of the beauties of being able to hunt Miriams and Rios, because it's a fully interactive experience. You know, you're not just kind of calling every, you know, 30 minutes or whatever. I think guy told me, like, every 15 minutes, hit them with something. And because they're very talkative, they're very, you know, social birds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this joker was chattering for the better part of 2 hours. I mean, he was talking. He just didn't like what I was saying. I'm just not a very good, I don't flirt very well when it comes to turkeys, I guess.
No. But, you know, the fact that you're trying to get out there but you're getting out there and then trying to get it done without the decoys and stuff, because, I mean, that was my thing. Like, the first year I turkey hunted, man, I kind of went about it with what I call the duck hunting mentality, where, you know, I got like 4 or 5 birds out there. I got them spread around. It's like, oh, this is going to look good to them. No, you don't necessarily have to go that route. You know, you get a land hen and a jake. Sometimes you can just put a jake. I mean, it's all about the time of the year and, you know, how feisty the birds are, how pressured they are. I mean, it's so many things. And I mean, you can read up on it. You can, you know, look at stuff, talk to people, look at videos. I mean, but the strategy that goes into it, man, it can almost be overwhelming depending on how much reading and video watching you do.
Right.
But until you get boots to the woods, that's where you're really going to learn.
Yeah.
So, I mean, good luck to you, man. I want to know how it's going, and, you know, hopefully you can seal the deal on.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate that. I mean, and I know, like, I'm kind of hard-headed. Like you were saying, like, as far as results, I love the process. Like, I love the fact that I cannot figure out. Like, people always say, oh, turkeys, they're so dumb. I tell you what. They're equipped for survival. Like
every animal is equipped for survival. They don't get old by being stupid. And I mean, the way I look at it, they're just like people. There's some that are very smart. There's some that have average intelligence. There's some that clearly have above average intelligence. And then there's some that is just dumb as a box of rocks. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And if you go in there underestimating any animal whose whole life survival or whole life, you know, existence is to survive, and you go in underestimating that, you know, you're already putting yourself behind the eight ball, in my opinion. But
exactly. And I mean, again, back to the IG moniker of the hunting student, I love the learning part of it. I love figuring out, like, what makes these things tick. Why are they so good at what they do? You know, how can I get better at doing what I'm trying to do? And just that whole process, I mean, that I just have that curiosity. Like, I want to know, like, is it possible? Is it possible for me and who I am to adapt my skill set, my abilities, to be successful in trying to turn this bird into a meal? So, you know, it's been a lot of fun.
Right. Man, Brandon, I have really enjoyed this. This is all, you know, great conversation. Like I said, I'm enjoying what you're doing with the hunting student. Continued success. And then, you know, anything that I can do, or if you got any questions or anything, you know, I can help you out with, especially like with the media part, you know, when you start putting your videos together and stuff like that, man, don't hesitate to reach out. You know, I think you're doing a really good thing here. You know, much success to you, and I hope it continues to flourish for you, man.
I appreciate that, and I will absolutely, I will be reaching out because, you know, I appreciate what you do. Like I said, I started listening when I saw your announcement that you're going live on the podcast, and everybody you've had on, I'm just like, man, this guy just keeps lining them up. So, I mean, I learned from all the stuff that you've been putting on. You're finding some incredible people, and it's just, I mean, keep it up because, I mean, there's those people out there like, you know, like us, right, that are trying to figure out, you know, the way to do this and don't have to be all, you know, about themselves about it, but a helping hand. I mean, we just build out this community, and that way, you know, like you said, we can preserve the outdoors for the generations that are coming behind us.
Most definitely. Most definitely. Brandon, I appreciate you. Before you jump here, let the people know where they can find you and find the Hunting Student.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm on Instagram, The Hunting Student, and we're getting ready to, you know, build out the website, thehuntingstudent.com. I'm online, you know, just Instagram. I'm not on Twitter with this stuff yet or Facebook or anything like that. I'm trying to keep it very specific because the platforms, the way, I mean, you can over in my experience, you just overextend and try and manage too many. I'm just one guy right now and just trying to help out where I can and learn what I can. So hit me in the DMs, reach out, you know, let me know what questions you have. I'm never going to give anybody who's trying to learn a hard time. I want to support that. And if there's anything that you feel like I could benefit from, I mean, I just got a great tip on an app that's going to help me with my turkey calling abilities. So I appreciate that too. It goes both ways. But AB, I appreciate you having me on, man. It's been awesome. And I know you've had a long, long, long day. So thanks for dealing with me on this West Coast time zone.
Oh, yeah. No problem, man. Like I said, I wanted to talk to you and, you know, I was going to accommodate your schedule. You know, when you told me you got family, you know, obligations, I mean, you'd be a fool to beef with that. You got to keep all that stuff in order. You got to go out to turkey hunt. You got to take care of your family obligations. And you just knocked out an interview on the podcast. So, man, no, I appreciate it. You've had a full day yourself, but I'm going to go ahead and get out of here. Brandon, yep. Thank you. And we'll talk again soon, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Once again, I'd like to thank Brandon Goodwin for joining me on the Bryantland Country Podcast. Hopefully you guys learned something and you guys will check him out on Instagram at The Hunting Student and check out his projects that he'll have coming up down the pipe here real soon. As for me, before I get out of here today, I just want to remind you guys of a couple of things. Bryantlandcountry.com is the website. We have a shop page. We have new gear on there. We got a Bryantland Country podcast t-shirt, and then we got a Hey Turkey t-shirt. Go and pick you up one. We got hats. We got hoodies. We got other t-shirts. Make sure you take the time to go look at the Bryantland shop and pick up and purchase something. Also, we have videos that we've been putting together, not to mention videos that I'm working on now, but videos that we've done in the past, telling some great stories, some pretty funny videos, some great informative videos of interviews that we've done. Make sure you check out the on-demand tab on the BryantlandCountry.com page. I'm going to get out of here. Make sure you come back next week. Hey, also, real quick, if you are new to the podcast, if you're just downloading this podcast for the first time, go and check out the other episodes, man. We are building a catalog. We got some bonus episodes on there on our catalog on our podcast, which are a little bit more edgier. Kind of let my hair down, what's left of it anyway, on those bonus episodes, just kind of spitballing and telling you what I think about certain things and some of my travels and some of, you know, my experiences out in the field doing a little bit of hunting. But make sure you check out those bonus episodes of the Bryantland Country Podcast. They're called the Bonus Eps. Make sure you check those out. Hey, thank you again for supporting the podcast, supporting the brand. I'm going to get out of here and I'll catch you guys next week on another episode of the Bryantland Country Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Bryantland Country Podcast, hosted by AB3. Please leave us a positive review and 5-star rating on iTunes. Be sure to check out our podcast section on our website, bryantlandcountry.com, for previous podcasts. Check us out on Instagram at Official Bryantland and Twitter at 3Bryantland. This has been an AB3 Media production. Join us next time for another edition of the Bryantland Country Podcast.